listener production.
Take it away, my dulcet-toned Adonis.
Oh, wait, it's just me. Caleb. Caleb already looks mortified.
Are you suggesting I'm not a dulcet-toned Adonis? For goodness sake, I'm your boyfriend.
Oh, God, exactly. Okay, so Jacob William Stanley, my dear ridiculously tanned co-host, is somewhere in the jungle slash ocean nature in far north Queensland. I'm not sure. I don't really partake in nature that often. And his computer shat its pants. It did a big poopy in its pants and it stopped working. So he is so far away from civilization, he couldn't even get to the Apple store until the weekend. So we unfortunately could not record an episode this week.
That's just called Queensland, isn't it?
So I've got Caleb here stepping in. We're going to republish a little episode, one of my favourites, called the fake heiress Anna Delvey episode. And I picked this one to republish because Julie Garner, this amazing actress who we talked about, I think, last week or the week before, about someone who could play Madonna in the new biopic. Anyway, Julie Garner, who, oh, you know Julie Garner. She's in Ozark.
Oh, yes, yes. One of the few, one of the few shows you've managed to get me to watch.
Yes. Yeah. And so she was spotted visiting Anna Delvey in prison because she's going to play her in the new Shonda Rhimes series about Anna Delvey. So that made it feel a bit relevant this week. And plus, it's just really awesome. I'm obsessed with that girl. She posts stuff on Instagram all the time, even though she's in jail. Who knows how? But I didn't want to leave you high and dry without any fresh material because I know that makes you guys cranky. So I thought I'd just do a new little break in news, and so I don't have to talk to myself. Caleb has kindly agreed to step in.
And what have I got myself in for?
Oh, dear. This is we've talked about you quite a lot, darling, on
yes,
this podcast.
I know.
The 65-year-old man in a 20-something body.
Nothing wrong with that.
The young fogey. Yeah.
Well, someone has to be the adult in this relationship.
It's true. Someone does. So I'll just do a little. Do you partake in just the gist? Do you listen?
Every now and again.
So do you know what I'm about to do?
I do know what you're about to do. I got.
Do
I'm
you
trying
want
to? I'm trying to read your
don't
notes.
Don't read my
I'm trying
list.
To read your notes here. One of which
no,
is,
don't spoil it.
One of which is penis. I mean, what's
oh no, it? So you don't even know what that is. Okay. Do you want to try the song?
No.
Come on.
No.
Caleb never does anything
I can't
silly.
Do the song.
You know, Caleb doesn't even wear T-shirts because he says they're not dignified.
No, it's got to have a collar. It doesn't. If there's no collar, it doesn't feel right.
It's not.
Know?
It's not dignified.
No, but it's not about it being. It just doesn't feel right. I don't feel right if there's not something on my.
Do
neck.
You want to try the breaking news song?
No, you
come
do
on.
The breaking news.
Come
song.
On, you try it.
My fans want you
do
to
do something
the
silly
news
once
song.
In your life.
Do the bloody song.
All right, here we go. Breaking news. I got the scoop. See, X-ray, X-ray. Read all about it. A breaking news. Can you imagine ever doing that yourself?
No. And I think the audience is quite glad I didn't.
Were you alive when little boys in news caps used to sell newspapers like that? Were you
no,
around?
No, darling.
All right, so this week I'm just going to do for breaking news actually just a bunch of recommendations because Jacob and I occasionally recommend things that we're watching, listening to, reading, whatever, and you always ask us for more. So I put together a little list this week and, yes, Caleb mentioned on my list he sees the word penis. So one of my recommendations this week is just penis.
Right.
No, it's not, you doofus. There's a show called Pen 15.
Ha, ha, ha.
Weren't you in high school, didn't you ever write Pen 15?
Yes, of course, okay. Everyone did.
So there's a show called Pen 15. I'm sure a lot of you have seen the first season. The second season just dropped on Stan. And it's two women who I think they're about my age. They're like early 30s. And they play themselves in high school, but everyone else in the show is like 13, in year 7, 13, 14. But they're playing their 13, 14-year-old selves.
Right.
And the... It's not even like they don't go crazy with makeup and hair or anything. It's just these two women are such good actresses that they just totally embody 13-year-old girls. And particularly for people our age, if you went to high school in the late 90s, like early 2000s, this show is so perfect, everything about it, from wearing your hair in a spiky bun and having two tiny little bits of fringe hanging down the sides of your face, to all the boys having like Backstreet Boys bum part hair, which was like the hottest, sexiest hair to have. And also like not really a lot of internet, like no one had mobile phones then yet. It was just like, and so they do this show and it is just so beautiful and heartfelt. It's hilarious. Obviously it's a comedy, but it just captures what it's like to be, to what it was like to have been 13, 14, 15 years old back at that time. It is one of the best shows ever. I can't believe it hasn't been nominated for awards. I think it should be this time.
Yeah, I'm kind of glad I missed that stage of you with the little twirly things down
the front. Oh, God, and yes, butterfly clips. Do you know what they are?
Yes.
Yeah, and it was, like, cool to have 1,000 of them in your hair. And also, like, it's crazy to me how makeup these days with girls is so professional and amazing. Like, Kylie Jenner sells all that makeup that makes her look incredible, right? But back then we just had like frosted lip gloss.
But seriously, you look at photos of 13-year-old girls now compared to 13-year-old girls in the 90s. Ridiculous.
Well, we still looked like girls. Like I had actual glitter. Like it was cool to put like there was this stuff called glitter gel and it just came in a jar and you just put it all over your face. Like
it's still acceptable in some quarters.
And like just like, you know, coloured eyeshadow and and your eyebrows.
You've been to the Fringe Club, Rosie. You know that's still in.
You had to have eyebrows that were like thin, like like one hair along. Like I'm so glad my eyebrows at least grew back.
Have eyebrows like an inch wide and
I know, but some girls' eyebrows never grew back from overplucking back then.
Well, serves you right, doesn't it?
I know I'm a little older than you, but I feel like you're probably lucky to get me at this stage in my life.
I thought 33, that's the time to do it.
Yeah, that's the time to
Got through past all of that teenage angst.
Exactly.
All of that crap in your 20s.
Yeah.
You're not so
all
lucky.
All that crap in my 20s, otherwise known as the mental health bits. Yeah, thanks. Yeah, you got like slightly put together, successful, like not so much of a hot mess, Rosie.
We'll keep that together.
Yeah, we'll keep that together. Okay, here's one that you do know because we just watched it together, the documentary Love Fraud.
Mm.
Did you like it?
I did.
It was awesome.
Very well put together, doco.
Okay, so on, what was it on?
Binge. It's on Stan.
Stan. It's a four-part documentary about this guy who basically screws over women, like dates them, gets them to sign over all their money to him and then leaves them. But in this doco about how many women, like...
Oh, there'd be, I don't know, close to a dozen of them.
Yeah, they all get together, all these women who he's defrauded or screwed over, and they, like, find this, like, cool, like, sassy female bounty hunter who's, like, chain-smoking, and this female bounty hunter helps them hunt him down. And over the four parts of this thing, how good is it, Caleb?
It is. Actually, the best part, to be quite honest, is this bounty hunter woman who, I don't know, she'd be in her 50s or 60s or something.
And she's lived a hard life.
Looks pretty rough.
Yeah.
But she's sitting there doing, what's that little plastic craft thing?
Oh, where you pick up the beads with a pen and you click them into
it. Yeah, but it's like painting by numbers. Yeah. It turns into a picture.
You get them in Lingcraft, I've seen them.
And she doesn't get one of them in the hole. And she goes... Dirty bitch. But no, it's ridiculous. Like what he did, this guy, we don't want to spoil it, but like close to a dozen women and he was married to them in different states same time, and he would come and sweep them off their feet in 3 weeks. He was getting married.
And the thing is, it's not like he's a Ken doll. He's an average looking guy, but I kept saying to Caleb while we were watching, I felt so sorry for these women because they were mostly in their 40s or 50s. A lot of them had been married before unhappily.
Yeah.
And he just knew how to make them feel loved and like he showed them affection and he showed, and they were just lonely women who were desperate for
and
that.
He just gave them attention.
And yeah, and that's why
and
they fell for
their
it.
Bank accounts.
But I kept saying like how sad that that's how, it's why old people get scammed and yeah, you always see it on a current affair.
And even drained the bank accounts of their husbands too.
Well, yeah, he did. Yeah. And so anyway, it's the greatest doco. And the awesome thing about it, I won't spoil it, is but the last episode will blow your mind. Like, you can't believe it.
You get to see him.
Yeah. But don't say anything
else.
No,
I won't. But he goes through his explanation of why he did or didn't do.
You just said.
No, but it's like it's not saying what he's.
It's
you've got to see it. You've got to see it.
He is just.
But it is seriously compelling viewing.
And we were both just speechless watching it. Yeah. It was nutso. So, have any of your older friends been online scammed?
No, I don't. Really? Well, not that I'm aware of. This is the problem, though. A lot of people don't own up to being scammed online.
Because they're embarrassed.
And it's crazy because all of these people get done, particularly in these romance scams, and they're not stupid people.
Mm.
They're people who've made a lot of money and worked in respectable jobs. And I just look at that and go, how the hell does that happen?
But the thing is, you can be not stupid, but online literacy and online intelligence is a whole different kind of thing that they never had to learn. Like, they just didn't. Nobody told them that you can get sent a document online that looks exactly like it would. Like, it seemed when they explain how they got sucked into something, you can be like, well, if you don't really understand the internet, I can see how you would believe all that junk. So anyway,
I'm still holding out for my Nigerian princess who's going to give me hundreds of millions of dollars.
Maybe I'm scamming you.
Well, yeah, you may well be, actually.
You'll wake up tomorrow, this house will be in my name.
I know, you'll have taken it.
Chucked your clothes out in the yard.
Oh, my God. This is an SOS.
I'm definitely playing.
If you're listening.
I'm definitely playing the long game coming to Adelaide.
Don't delete this, we'll need it in court.
Okay, another show that I'm obsessed with right now that I think you saw me watching. It's on Netflix. It's called Get Organized, The Home Edit. And it's just these two women in the US who run like a company where they go to people's houses and organize them for them.
Right.
So it's like, what's her name? The Japanese woman who's like, Marie Kondo is like, get rid of all your shit. These women are like, have as much shit as you want, buy, 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 consume, consume, consume. We'll organize it for you, right? So they started getting, they have like millions of followers online and they started organizing really famous people's houses like the Kardashians and stuff. So then they got a TV deal and they have this show where they just go to famous people's houses and regular people's houses and organize their stuff.
I'm sorry, this is bullshit.
No,
because.
Why?
Because. Once someone else comes in and organises all of your crap, you've got no idea where it is.
Well, no, but
It has to be disorganised.
No.
Everything, you walk into a house and go, geez, looks like a bomb went off in here, but I can tell you exactly where everything is.
You know exactly where every model boat is placed?
Well, yes, on those little wooden tables you don't like.
Where every antique radio is.
I feel like you want a show where someone comes in and just, like, tells me that I can't have any of the furniture I like. And we've got to have all this painted crap and.
Oh, Jacob and I have talked about it on here quite a few times. Caleb and I have very different tastes. Caleb would like this house to look like a grandma died in it.
No, I don't want it to look like a grandma died in it.
I want it to look just slightly more modern than
that.
No. So we're struggling to compromise.
Grandma died. You do me. Unbelievable. No. I mean, look. If you described it as a bit more, you know, club room, perhaps.
Club room.
But, you know, the Chesterfield Lounge has been vetoed.
All right, Alan Jones.
Right?
Yes, I vetoed the Chesterfield Lounge.
We're getting an Eames chair.
Yes, well, because Eames chairs are cool.
So we'll have an Eames chair.
We'll have an Eames chair.
We'll have the boats. We'll have the old radios.
And what about your
Polly Pockets.
Yes.
Yes.
I just would like some of the furniture we buy not to be from estate auctions.
Well, what's wrong with it? You want to go and buy all this cheap foreign crap from IKEA.
No, I don't want cheap foreign crap. I'm like, why would you spend $200 on two, like, solid wood 50-year-old bedside tables when you could go to Kmart and get two bedside tables for $30. They're bedside tables.
But they're from bloody China and they're all plasticky and crap. Why wouldn't you want nice, solid wood furniture that survived time, will continue to survive?
Okay.
You reckon you're a left winger, but I am a real recycler. I buy stuff that's already been, you know, these radios from the 50s. This is real environmentalism.
I do that with my Polly Pockets.
With your Polly Pockets.
Yeah.
With your furniture, though.
Anyway, so we're just having our arguments on the podcast now.
Although I'm sure
a lot of people listening have had this exact argument.
I'm sure we're not the only couple that has such disagreements.
I'm currently trying to convince Caleb to buy this couch that we saw at IKEA that I've called the Blue Velvet Cloud.
God.
And it's the comfiest couch I've ever sat on in my life, and it's blue velvet, like dark blue velvet, and I want it so badly.
Yeah, look, I'll grant you that it is comfy.
It's very comfy.
But it is massive.
No, it'll fit.
Oh, dear.
You're going to get bleeped. We're not meant to say the F word.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh dear.
We're allowed to say the S word.
Naughty me.
Naughty me. Do you guys see what I'm dealing with here?
Oh, mate.
Do you understand hearing his voice now that he's a 65-year-old man?
Blue velvet?
It's dark navy
you
blue.
You reckon my taste is dodgy? Blue velvet?
I have good taste, thank you so much. Anyway, So the home edit is awesome. The first episode, they go to Reese Witherspoon's house and organise all her costumes that she's kept from all her movies. So they have like a section for Legally Blonde, and they have a section for like Walk the Line, and they have, and it's like so cool. It's, I want them to organise my life. It reminds you of like, you know, you like will go to like Daiso or IKEA or Kmart and you'll get all these plastic containers and you'll get all these labels and you'll be like, I'm going to organize everything. And then they just sit in the corner of your house for a year and you never do it.
I'm worried I'm going to come home one day and they will have done a number on my place.
My dream, absolute dream. And then I've been listening to this amazing podcast called American Hysteria. You've got to go listen to it. It's basically, it's a little bit similar to You're Wrong About, which I mention all the time. It's this girl, she's just on her own and it's really well written. And she basically just goes back through things in the US that have made people hysterical at different times and debunks them. So she talks about like when people got hooked up in the satanic panic thing in the 90s, or when people became convinced that Halloween candy was poisoned, or like she talks about gay panic and she talks about all this cool stuff and then goes back and kind of debunks it, and it's really, really interesting. Caleb, funnily enough, is talking on this podcast but doesn't actually listen to any podcasts, which drives me insane. Do you know what Caleb listens to? His dream job, talkback radio.
Yeah, but I like to, I mean, being a journalist, I like to be up to date with what's happening right now. I listen to a lot of live radio.
Yes,
you know, I listen to, well, I mean, you've got 2GB in Sydney or wherever the hell you are, but we've got 5AA here.
Yes, 5AA. I've been forced to listen to a bit of 5AA.
You have, but you've also been forced to listen to the BBC World Service overnight.
Oh, yes, that's true.
I like to go to bed and listen to the BBC World Service, which is a wonderful service. It's got all sorts of stuff from all over the world, radio documentaries, all kinds of
stuff. Well, I will say I haven't hated it. I, as you know, have not had a TV in my bedroom since I was 4 years old. I fall asleep with it on. Here at Caleb's house, it shocks me that there is no television in the bedroom. I will be fixing that soon. So instead of the TV being on at night, we listen to Caleb's radio.
Well, it's much better than having the TV. All that bloody light. I don't know how you sleep with that light in the room. It's
anyway,
terrible.
So American Hysteria is a great podcast. Yes. I think you should listen to it. Right. I know you won't. I've told you to listen to You're Wrong About 100 times. I think the only podcast he's listened to all the way through is Mum Says My Memoir Is a Lie, and that's because he couldn't be bothered reading my book, so he got to just listen to it.
On your instruction.
On my instruction. Have you read my second book yet, by the way?
I live it
every day.
I know, I do.
But if you can think of any podcast that a 65-year-old man would find interesting, let me know. Email
and don't
us.
Don't suggest Koshy's business podcast either.
Just the gist podcast at gmail.com. Please email in. And then, oh, okay, so my final reco this week, and we'll put all these
reco
in the show notes. Recommendation.
Who calls it a reco?
Me.
Fair enough.
What would you call it?
Recommendation.
It's a reco.
A reco.
My final reco.
Reco.
This week is...
To listen to on your smoko.
Is I listened to, oh, I just mentioned, the You're Wrong About This Week had an episode about Princess Diana, which was super amazing. And in it, they said, Michael, the co-host, said that he'd listened to this audiobook called The Diana Chronicles by Tina Brown. And I was like, yes, thanks. It is like 20 hours long. I'm like 3 hours in because, as you know, Caleb, I've been getting into my crochet.
Yes, you have been getting into your crochet.
I've become a crocheter this
now,
week.
Now, you carry on about me being 65 years old, right? And I come home from work and you are sitting, without fail, every day this week, you have been sitting on the couch crocheting.
My like, new favorite thing.
I didn't realise I'd shacked up with my nan.
Well, because I started... I tell you what, guys, I Googled, like, how to do a granny square and it is so hard at first. I was getting so frustrated with it. You can go to my Instagram and see my first one just look like a bunch of yarn had spewed into an oblong shape. But then something happens, like, while you're doing it, something clicks and then all of a sudden you just get it.
You've been getting really good at
it. I know. I've gotten really good.
It's a really big one. That, like, I don't know if you've put it on Instagram or
not yet. It's
but
big.
Rosie's done this really, but it's like she's going to turn it into a blanket.
It is. It's going to be a blanket.
For the cat or
well, because I don't know how to do anything else. So the square just keeps getting bigger and bigger. I don't know what else to do. But I went to Lincraft yesterday and even got some more yarn.
Oh, my
like
God.
Some more wool and in some cool
colours. It's never going to stop. It's going to be the size of this room next.
So I'm really into crochet, guys. No, but I found it's really good for, like, kind of meditative, because whenever I get writer's block or I just need to like stop and do something else with my brain, I just find it really good for mindfulness. You just sit there and you kind of like gives your brain a bit of a break and it's good. I like it. Good mindfulness tool. So if you've tried it and you thought it was too hard, trust me, it's not. You just have to keep going until you cry and then you get it.
And it's not just the preserve of old ladies.
No. Apparently. And it's so cheap. Like, I just went, there's this shop here in Adelaide called Cheapest Chips, and I went in there and I got some crochet hooks for $5 and I got five, what do you call it, balls of yarn?
Yeah.
Balls of wool for five for $10. Bada bing, bada boom, new hobby, $15.
Fantastic. So, a bit cheaper than my auction hobby, but, you know.
Oh, yes, Caleb's auction hobby.
It's where I get the radios and all the furniture that Rosie doesn't like.
Every Saturday we go into this auction place. What's it called?
Scammels.
Scammels, and we look at dead people's stuff.
It's not all dead people's stuff. I've sold stuff at Scammels.
Oh, have you really? I thought it was all just old dead people.
No, well, people bring it in and sell it. I'm sure some of it's dead people's stuff. But
so we go in and we look at old dead people's stuff and then you bid on it.
Yeah,
on the online on Monday.
Yeah, on Monday, yeah.
Yeah.
No, see, normally the great thing about an auction is actually going along.
Well, no, actually,
the buzz of bidding and stuff, but you can't do that because of bloody Rona.
I know, but I've actually enjoyed going there every Saturday and looking at all the stuff.
It's cool.
It's
stuff.
It's fun. There. Yeah, there is a lot of cool stuff. I'm really into all the vintage toys.
Yes.
Of which I wanted one, and Caleb forgot to bid on it. It was an old tin robot, but it was Rosie the Robot from the Jetsons, and I wanted it so badly and Caleb forgot.
And Rosie was devastated.
I actually nearly almost cried. Had tears in my eyes. I was so excited about it.
Not my
and
finest
it went,
moment.
And it went for like pretty reasonably priced, I think. Like
it was $40.
Yeah, something like that. Rosie the robot. I wanted it so bad. Anyway, so while I'm crocheting, I've been listening to this audio book called The Diana Chronicles by Tina Brown, and it's a little bit trashy, but it's just Diana's whole life. It goes into super detail. It's kind of like a long podcast, and I highly recommend it. It's really good. You would actually really like it, Caleb, because you're into royal stuff and snooty, hooty-tooty grandma stuff. What have we got here?
I'm not going to take you saying I like grandma stuff on your crochet.
No, crocheting's hipster. Oh, crocheting's God, cool. What have we got here? When I was unpacking, I found a teacup and saucer from, what is it?
That's a coronation saucer and teacup, I believe.
From Elizabeth II's coronation in the 50s.
Was it 52 or 53?
You're really asking the wrong person.
It was thereabouts. I got a bit of royal memorabilia.
Yeah.
In fact, somewhere I've got a little coin from when Diana and Charlie married.
Oh, do you really?
Yeah.
You're such a dad.
I have to dig it out.
Can you tell me, Caleb, just before we go, just one current thing about pop culture that you know?
Well, I don't bloody know.
Just one. Come on, try and think of one thing about celebrities, celebrity gossip, pop culture, movies, anything. Is there anything you could tell me right now that you know that's going on in the world of pop culture?
The Kardashians are stopping their show.
Oh, that's – how do you know that?
Well, I don't know. It came up on Twitter or something.
All right, give me another one.
Oh, shit.
Tell me something that you know.
I've been put on the spot here.
Yeah, I know. This is funny. You don't know anything.
I don't know anything. No. I can tell you all about what happened in court yesterday. Okay. I've got no idea. This is what I have you for.
Yes, exactly.
You deal with all of that stuff and mm-hmm. I'll deal with all the serious crap and then we'll meet somewhere in the middle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Love it. So, politics, huh?
Yeah, politics.
Yeah, election, negative gearing.
Yes.
Stamp duty.
You're doing really well.
Thank you.
No, no, I've explained negative gearing to you.
Have you? That's probably why I know the words.
I was about to say I explained negative gearing to Rosie and she understood it, but she's obviously forgotten.
I've already forgotten. I'll
forget about that.
Whenever I have questions like that, I ask Jamila. she tells me.
Though, you recently bought
I did.
The book of economics.
I bought a book about economics because I've like made it a goal to really sort of take control of my finances and be like a business bitch, like really like, you know, into that stuff. And so I was like, well, I don't just want to understand my own personal situation. I want to understand like money as a concept and like that kind of thing. And so I went to the bookstore and I just bought a book on economics that had the most pictures in it.
And how much of it have you read?
About 3 pages. But look, I'm excited about getting more interested. Okay, let's end it there. Guys, that was just a little bit of breaking news for you. Oh, actually, it's gone for half an hour. But please enjoy this episode on Anna Delvey that we did. I can't wait for the show to come out. And hopefully Jacob will somewhere up in paradise find an Apple store, get his computer fixed, and we'll be back next week because I have a really good episode prepared. All right, bye. Love you. Bye, bye, bye. Want to say anything?
Have fun. Oh, no, actually. No.
We're keeping that in.
No, because that's what I always say to people on the phone.
What do you say?
I just say have fun at the end of it because I hate it when people just end a conversation by saying something like, goodbye.
So
it just feels really non-personal.
You end your phone call saying, have fun.
I often say, have fun.
What if they're like, okay, I'm going to my grandma's funeral now. And you go, okay, have fun.
Oh, well, could be a fun time.
Okay.
Could be a wake afterwards.
Okay, here we go. Okay, end the podcast.
Have fun.
Have fun. Shall we get to it?
Please.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so excited about this one. I've been wanting to do this one for so long, but, like, it's just there's quite a lot to it and so I sort of have notes and I kept putting things off and then I found this book about it so I wanted to wait till I'd read the book and so I'm excited to finally be doing it.
Yay.
And you know how much I love female con artists.
Yes.
So they're my favourite topics. So this is just the gist on the fake heiress Anna Delvey. Mm. And I had here in my notes, have you heard anything about her, but you thought she was related to Anastasia. So
I thought she was Anastasia. I thought Anna was just a truncation of Anastasia.
Because all of your knowledge of history comes from Disney. By the way, I love that animated movie. The Anastasia one.
Yeah.
It's a really good one.
Yeah.
And John Cusack voices the sexy man friend, and I love his voice. So he was always one of my favourite Disney men.
I think he's one of the most attractively drawn Disney cartoon characters.
That's true too.
As well. Yes. And it's disturbing that we're having this conversation. But he's in the top five.
Oh, by the way, just speaking of hot Disney princes, You know what really messed with my head as a kid? That I was super attracted to the fox that played Robin Hood. Do you remember the animated version of Robin Hood where it was all animals and Robin Hood was a fox? I was so into him.
Oh.
Like, what's that about? I don't know.
You've got a psychologist and a psychiatrist to ask about that. I'm not going to weigh in with an opinion.
He was hot, that fox Robin Hood. He was hot as. Okay, here we go. So Anna Delvey is a girl who managed to live in New York for about 4 years in expensive hotels, eating at the best restaurants, socializing with the richest people because everyone thought she was a wealthy heiress from a billionaire German family.
Mm-hmm.
But she was just a grifter who is now in prison after being caught almost got it, a $25 million loan from a bank. And the thing that I kind of love about her is she's not sorry. Like, she has just leaned into her criminal status and she's like, yeah, I nearly did it, mofos. So this is the story of Anna Delvey. Buckle in. So she's born Anna Sorokin in Russia in 1991 to lower middle class parents. Her dad was a truck driver. Her mom was a housewife. They then moved to Germany when she was 16 because her dad got a better job there. So her dad started making like quite good money then. She graduated high school and got into the Central St. Martin's Art School in London, which is pretty legit. That's an art school people, you know, come from all over the world to go to. So her dad agrees to pay for it and to pay for all her living expenses while she's in London going to art school. She goes to London for a bit but never actually goes to art school and decides that that's for chumps. So she drops out and she gets an internship at Purple Magazine in Paris. And Purple Magazine is a very exclusive fashion magazine. It's very sceney. It's very like all the highest, most fanciest models and photographers and editors, you know, it's basically like working at the hipster version of Vogue. And so her parents are pissed off, but they agree to pay for her move to Paris and to pay for all her living expenses there because she basically tells them like this is where I think she's smart. She wants to be among people with power and influence straight away. And she's like, why would you go to university? That's for chumps. Like, get right in there. And I got to say, I kind of feel the same after wasting 3 years of my life at university. So,
and Elizabeth Holmes made it work for her as well.
I'm with her. I'm with Anna up till now. I'm still in. So it's at Purple Magazine in Paris that she starts calling herself Anna Delvey and tells people that she's from Germany, even though she can not speak great German and she has a Russian accent. She gets in with all the editors of the magazine. So this is where she's smart again. She's like, she doesn't want to go to university. She wants to be in the industry. And then when she's in the industry, she's like, I don't want to just be an intern. I want to be up there with the best of the best. So she gets in with all the editors and starts going to a lot of exclusive like parties and stuff. And people say she has a real talent of figuring out who the best person in the room is to be connected with and just zeroing in on that person and not giving an F about anybody else. Like, she doesn't waste time on nobodies. And she's dropping the Purple Magazine name everywhere because that gets her some clout. Like, it's like, you know, when I say it's the equivalent of Vogue, it kind of is. It's like if you go to get into an exclusive party and say, oh, I'm here from Purple Magazine, they'll let you straight in. So in 2013, when she's 22, she goes with some Purple Magazine staff to New York to cover New York Fashion Week. And while she's there, she goes to like every exclusive party that she can and she makes sure that she gets photographed everywhere so to get her face in the social pages. And so she starts to seem legit, like this legit kind of socialite who's going to all these parties with all these cliquey society people. And these people will, because of how cliquey it is, they'll just accept you if they think you're one of them. And I think that's something she understands. She's like, act like fake it till you make it. If you act like you're one of them, they will just assume that you are and not question it. And so she, gets really good at kind of seamlessly fitting herself in to these parties and these groups. And I was listening to this podcast about her and this girl, and we'll put all the details in the show notes of everything I listened to and consumed because there's so much and it's I'm obsessed. I went down so many rabbit holes.
But there was this girl who knew her and was at some party with her. And the girl was like, oh my God, look over there, Anna, there's so-and-so. And it was like some famous photographer. And Anna was like, oh, he's a good friend of mine. Let me just go say hi and then I'll call you over. So Anna goes, says hi, and the girl watches them chatting. And then Anna motions for her to come over. She comes over and they start talking. They interview the photographer and he's like, I had never met her in my life. She came over to me at this party and said, oh, hey, you know, I think we have some mutual friends from Purple Magazine. We started chatting about the people we knew for a couple of minutes. Then her friend came over and Anna introduced me as her oldest, bestest friend in New York. And he said, I just started laughing because I thought she was being funny. Like, I thought she was being ironic. Like, we just met and she was like, oh, here's my oldest friend. So I laughed and we said, she was actually pulling off a scam. Like, this girl thought it was. And so she just was really clever at doing things like that.
Yeah, yeah.
So after being in New York for a few weeks, she decides she wants to stay there. She's like, Paris is for chumps. New York is where it's at. And apparently there was some dodginess at Purple Magazine. They're quite embarrassed by their association with her in this whole thing. So apparently she was fired, but they won't really say what happened. It's not really confirmed. But I honestly think it was the same as art school and the same as the internship. She was like, screw this. Like, that's not powerful or important enough. I want to come here and just start faking it until I make it here. And so she tells her parents she wants to live in New York now. And they get the shits because they're like, you know, you dropped out of uni, art school. Now, you know, that we supported you through this internship. What are you going to do in New York? And she's just like, New York is where it's at. And they're like, well, like, we're going to support you for like a month or so, but you've got to get a job and support yourself. Either like come home or go to university or do something. We're not just paying for you to gallivant around New York. And so this is pretty much where she starts telling everyone in New York that she's a German heiress with an $80 million trust fund. And so she keeps details of her family pretty vague, but there's lots of rumors about what her family and what her dad does for a living. But whatever it is, it's just understood that she's rich as F. And it seems legit to people. Like, she was an intern at Purple Magazine, which is something rich kids do. They'll go and do a token internship at a really cool place. And then she turned up in New York and she's like, yeah, I'm from this rich family in Europe. And she's been at all the parties and her photo's been in the paper. So people are like, seems legit. She checks herself into a fancy hotel and buys some expensive stuff. And this is where she's smart again. So she'll buy like one expensive thing. So she'll wear a pair of Celine because she wears like eyeglasses. So she has a really expensive pair of Celine glasses. And then she'll wear all black. So you can't really tell like where it's from. And people will be like, I love your dress. And she'll go, Alexander McQueen. But it's probably like, you know, from Target, but like she just knows how to look kind of rich. But another interesting thing that people said was she could pull it off with stuff like that, but something that a lot of rich people said gave her away is that she always had really crappy hair, because that's something that you can't really fudge. And so like people would say, yeah, she looked the part, but then I'd look at her hair and I'd be like, what, do you go to Just Cuts? Like, what's wrong with you? Like, anyway. She also like tipped a lot. So she always paid for expensive lunches and dinners, and she always put down lots of cash, and she was at all the right events. And so nobody was questioning that she was just this heiress who had just moved to New York and was wanting to get to know people. And all those people in those cliques are like, yes, you're one of us. Come be friends with us, new girl to New York. But her parents' cash was only going to last like a hot minute.
And was she getting into a fair amount of debt at this point as well?
Not yet, but I'll explain. Okay. So here's where she starts grifting people and banks. So she pretty much had her parents' money for like a second and then was like, I've got to figure this out. So by the time her parents stopped giving her money, she's established herself as like a legit wealthy heiress on the New York social scene. And she'd been telling everyone at all these dinners and parties and whatever that she's in New York because she wants to start a private club with her trust fund. So she wants to start like a club slash art gallery space and call it the Anna Delvey Foundation. people say when she described it, it sounded like her own version of Soho House. So can you, for people who don't know, describe what a private club like Soho House is?
I am lucky enough to have had friends in London, New York and Miami take me into Soho House. And
it's
one of those.
It's where Harry and Meghan had their first date, by the way.
Really?
Uh-huh.
In what city?
London.
Okay, there's a few scattered around London. So I think you pay an exorbitant annual fee to then get access, and I think you still need to book a table or a chair or whatever so it doesn't become too crowded at any point, but they'll usually have, you know, rooftop swimming pools and beautiful cocktail bars and restaurant areas and chill-out zones, and it's just a place for, you know, rich people to escape the hoi polloi.
Yeah, like it's a place where you can go and have a meal or a drink or whatever, and you don't have to worry about riffraff.
Yes.
So she wants to start her own, like her own one of that.
A sanctuary away from the paws.
Yes, and, you know, call it the, like, not at all self-absorbed Anna Delvey Foundation. Mm-hmm. Her big thing is that she's grown up around arts and the arts and artists, and so she wants her club to exclusively show the work of emerging artists. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like she's also being generous in opening this private arts club. So she's telling people she's in New York scouting locations and designers to get everything set up. And everybody thinks it's true. Like, why wouldn't it be? Like, this is the kind of stuff people in those super rich circles do talk about with each other. So there's no reason not to believe her. And this is where the benefit of the doubt that people give wealthy people really comes into play. So she manages to stay with people for a bit, just like, you know, spending the winter break at so-and-so's lake house or like, you know, she made friends with this super rich kid who was into the same art stuff as her, and they decided they wanted to go to this big exhibition in some country. And she was like, oh, can you just, like, I'm terrible with details. Can you book everything and I'll just give you the money? So he's like, sure. So they went overseas for like 2 weeks. Everything was on him. And then, like, she just never paid him. And he was like, oh, like, you know, and someone said to him later, didn't that bother you? And he's like, well, it wasn't really a lot of money to me because this kid's a millionaire. And he goes, you know, I just figured she forgot about it. And that's because that's how rich people often are with money. To them, it's of no consequence. They don't quite understand money, like, they understand money. It's not that they don't understand it. I think they understand it in a different way to us. Paws, us chumps, us paws. And so, you know, when she sort of didn't have the cash to pay for something or didn't, like, the rich people around her would cover it and it just wasn't really a thing. It was like, oh, whatever. They don't even think about a $200 lunch. And then she, you know, but she can't do that forever. So then she starts doing something called check kiting, which is basically, I mean, we don't have a huge check, like, and I mean written checks.
Yeah, yeah.
We don't have a huge check culture in Australia, like, because we haven't used them for so long, but they're still quite common in the US and particularly a few years ago. I mean, this was the mid-20-teens, were used quite a bit. And so it's a thing where you write a bunch of dodgy checks from one account, deposit them into another bank account, and then in the time between that check being deposited and it clearing, you can withdraw the money. And so she would write like $5,000 worth of checks, put it into an account, quickly withdraw $5,000 before those checks would bounce. And then she'd like spend some of that $5,000, but then take the money and put it into the other account that she'd written the checks from to sort of cover that. And then she'd do it with another account to cover that. So it's kind of like just borrowing money from all over banks in New York, hoping that it never catches up with you. And then using the money you've taken from that one to pay into that one. And then using the money you've taken from that one to pay into that one. So she was, but it can't, like, at some point that's going to crumble. It can't last forever. But this is how she's getting by, writing dodgy checks.
That is such an exceptionally flawed system that it's even possible to do that for a couple of days.
I know, but this is, I mean, there's so many banks. In the US, it's quite different to Australia. Like, they have so many different banks. True. Like, it's not just like Commonwealth, St. George, and two others. It's like there's so many different branded banks. So I think she just was good at avoiding it. So she's doing that. She's getting a bit of cash doing that. She checks into this fancy hotel and she tells them that she can't put a credit card down because she's like, but she's this German millionaire and her money's in this German account, and her finance broker will contact them about doing a wire transfer to cover her hotel bill. And because she's rich and people give rich people the benefit of the doubt, they're like, absolutely, Miss Delvey, here's a room, check in. So she checks into this super fancy hotel and she starts just charging everything to her room. Mm-hmm. So she'll eat at the restaurants in the hotel and drink at the bar in the hotel and invite people to have dinner in the hotel. So it all gets charged to her room, so she never has to actually pay for anything. Mm-hmm. And she's like dropping $100 tips and ordering $200 bottles of wine, so they think she's rich. Mm-hmm. And then when they start chasing her for the money, she'll either cover it by check kiting, so she'll quickly get some cash through dodgy means and pay them, or she'll just check out and disappear and go somewhere else. Mm-hmm. Again, which can't last long because New York's a big city, but it's not that big. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to get busted eventually. And she also starts to get actually serious about the Anna Delvey Foundation. Like, it's not just a dream, like a dodgy thing that she's telling people about. And this is where I think she's quite similar to our old bestie Elizabeth Holmes from Theranos. Mm. Because you can't be fully certain if it was all intended as a fraud from the start or if she was actually faking it until she makes it and she believes she's going to make it if she can just keep it going a bit longer until she gets everything together. So the Anna Delvey Foundation is something that she's actually taking steps to make happen. Like through the connections she's made in New York, she's introduced to really important finance managers and brokers, and she hires one of them. And this, like, because finance brokers are like, for us poor, we don't need them. But they basically, like, if you want to apply for a loan, you don't do any of that work. Mm. They go and organize all of that for you. Mm-hmm. You just say, I want this loan, this bank to give me $1 million, and your finance broker sorts it out. Mm-hmm. So she gets one of these brokers. She says that she's a billionaire heiress with a huge trust fund coming her way, and she needs a $25 million loan to get her foundation off the ground because she doesn't want to rely on her parents. She wants to do this herself. Mm-hmm. So she's really like, and so this broker like goes around to a bunch of banks to see about getting her this loan. She has this very fancy marketing deck, which is like a marketing presentation that she paid one of the best marketing firms in New York to put together for her about the Anna Delvey Foundation. But when I say she paid them, I mean they invoiced her for it and she never paid them. They were chasing her for months and never got their money. Mm. So she has this very professional presentation about this foundation, like, built club that she wants to start. So the broker's showing that to all the banks and blah, 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 blah. And she is inviting people to meetings at her hotel. Like, she gets, I can't remember the exact chef, but he's pretty much like Heston Blumenthal level chef, agrees to open a restaurant in her foundation club. Mm. Like, she's having meetings with actual real people who are very excited to get on board with this rich girl who seems to just be throwing cash around to let you do things in her cool new club.
Yeah, why not?
She wants to lease the building. It's a very famous building called the Church Mission Building in New York. It's like a very ancient, historic, old church. It's like 5 stories high. Mm. The lease is like $20 million. But if she can get this loan, even if she gets it fraudulently, she could lease this building. She's had all these meetings with all these people. She could pay them. She could actually pull this off. Like, I think she starts to think, I could do this. Mm. And so this is how close she comes to getting the loan. I cannot believe this. So a couple of banks that the finance broker approaches turn her down. They're like, no. But then one says, yeah, we'll give you $25 million loan. Just give us $100,000 like surety so we can do our due diligence looking into whether you're legit. Mm-hmm. And so Anna's like, yep, no problem. I can get you $100,000. So she somehow convinces another bank by like check kiting a bunch of money into the account that she's got money, and this other bank gives her a $100,000 line of credit. So this bank gives her $100,000. She pays that $100,000 to the bank that's going to give her a loan. She's like, here's $100,000. Look into me. And at this point, it must be so close she can freaking taste it. Mm. Like, this bank is like, we're going to give you $25 million. Just give us $100,000, like, you know, surety, deposit, and it's yours. Mm. And she does it. And so she must just think, I'll pay back that $100,000 when I get my $25 million. No dramas. And so they start doing their due diligence. They want to talk to, and she's all over it. Like, she covers everything. They want to talk to her German money manager. She gives them a number. They call it. Someone answers. They talk to them. Like, they want bank statements from her family's trust. She sends them over. Looks legit. Like, it's all her, obviously. It's all fraudulent. It's all forged, fake stuff. And then someone, thank God, they must be thinking now, at the bank is like, okay, we're about to give this girl $25 million. We can't just go off someone we've talked to on the phone and some forms she sent us. I think we actually need to go to Germany and meet her family's accountant at the bank and verify in person at the bank that her family is worth billions of dollars.
It's worth the cost of that plane ticket,
And that's what she paid them $100,000 for. So they're not even paying for it. Like, that's what her money pays for. And so they tell her that. And at that point, she says, I don't need the loan anymore. I've decided I'm just going to ask my dad for the money. And they're like, can you imagine how devo she must have been when they told her that? Like, she thought she was so close. Yeah. You can't fake a real meeting at a bank. And so they're like, oh, okay, that's fine. And so they've spent about $40,000 of the $100,000 she gave them doing the due diligence on her. So they give her $60,000 back, which she immediately withdraws and just starts spending. She's got 60 grand. Like, the plan sort of didn't happen, but she's got 60 grand. She has a $30,000 bill at the hotel she's been staying at that they've been threatening to kick her out over. So she pays $30,000 to her hotel and she's like, see, I told you I had money. And that leaves her with 30. And apparently, according to the concierge at the hotel who she'd kind of befriended, this was the point where she starts spending crazy money. Like, she's dropping all her $100 tips and she hires Dakota Johnson's personal trainer for private sessions because she was really famous because Dakota Johnson had just been naked in 50 Shades of Grey, so everyone wanted her personal trainer. And she's getting, like, $500 facials and she's just like, I just can't. She got $60,000. Save it, girl. Put it under your pillow. Like, why is she spending it? Anyway.
There's more where that came from.
And exactly.
She's figured out a way to rort the system.
So the concierge said people would fight to make deliveries to her room because you knew every time you went up there you'd get a $100 tip. Like, it was nuts. So how does it all fall apart? Because it's going to, obviously. I mean, she's in prison now, so obviously it did. Things come crashing down because of a girl called Rachel Deloach Williams. So Rachel is a photo editor at Vanity Fair. She's not like super rich or like from a famous New York society family or anything, but her job does mean she's well connected. And she's well connected enough for Anna to be interested in befriending her. She wrote a book about her experience with Anna, which makes it hard to feel sorry for her. Like, she's not rich, but, you know, she talks about her family's holiday house in Connecticut and traveling with friends for the weekend to, you know, Cuba and like her apartment in Manhattan that she can afford to live in. Like, so she's not super rich, but she's not a poor. Like, she's very privileged.
Upper
middle class. Rachel meets Anna through, they have some mutual friends and they start hanging out. And this is around the time Anna has that 30 grand that she's just spending everywhere. So Anna is paying for everything when Rachel first meets her. And as far as Rachel knows, she's this heiress, she's a billionaire, and she invites Rachel to come to the fancy trainer and she takes Rachel to the expensive facials and she like takes her to expensive dinners all the time. So Rachel is like, there's no reason for her to think Anna isn't super rich. Rachel likes all the free stuff. She likes all the parties. She likes hanging out with someone who pays for everything. The concierge friend, Neferati, that's her name, but they call her Nef by a nickname, hangs out with them too. So it's kind of the three of them. Rachel and Nef and Anna hang out quite a lot. And Nef says, like, Anna seemed to know everyone. Like, one night she was hosting a dinner and Nef was sitting next to Macaulay Culkin. And she was like, I don't know how Anna knows him or... And she was also like, and I was just a concierge and I felt like when you're a rich person, you're not allowed to be like, so did Michael Jackson, you know.
Yeah.
Like, she's like, that's all I wanted to know. But I was like trying to act like I fit in. But I think it was one of those things where lots of people knew her, but everybody assumed everybody else was her good friend. Like, nobody knew that none of them really knew anything about her.
Right.
But this is the point where, like, a lot of people have started to write her off as a bit weird, and it's no coincidence that her only two friends and people she's hanging out with at this point are some photo editor from a magazine and the concierge of her hotel. Mm. Like, all the other rich people she's been hanging out with have slowly started to be like, what's your deal? Go away. And then they also hang out with the personal trainer becomes their friend. She's called Casey. Mm-hmm. So they've sort of got this little group and Anna pays for everything. Mm-hmm. So Anna has to leave the US every 6 months because of her visa. You know how you have to leave the country and then come back in? And so that's coming up. And so she starts talking about, let's make it a fun trip and we'll all go and I'll pay for everything. And Rachel's like, ZOMJ, I'm in. She loves it because Anna pays for everything. So they invite Neff, but Neff can't go. They invite the personal trainer, Casey, and then Anna decides she's thinking about hiring someone to make a documentary about the Anna Delvey Foundation. And so Rachel introduces her to a filmmaker friend of hers called Jesse. And so Anna invites Jesse. So it's this weird little group of, it's Rachel, the personal trainer, Casey, Rachel's friend Jesse and Anna. And Anna books a trip to Marrakesh to stay in this massive villa that's like $10,000 a night that like royalty and famous people stay in. Basically, have you seen Sex and the City 2? You know that place they stay? It's basically like that. Like,
such a travesty, but
yes, it's a terrible movie, but yes, that is the kind of place they booked, Anna booked for Marrakesh. Now, on the day they're meant to leave, Anna hasn't booked any flights, but Rachel just figures, oh, well, she's really flighty and this is how rich people are. Like, they just book a flight and then 10 minutes later they go to the airport. Like, they don't care about specials or whatever. But as the day goes on, Rachel starts to stress because Jesse's her friend and Jesse thinks it's a work trip. So he's like, what's happening? Why isn't it booked? And so Rachel kind of feels like it's on her. So she calls Anna and Anna's like, oh, I've been stuck in meetings all day. Can you book the flights? And Rachel, who as a photo editor has to book trips for photo shoots and stuff all the time, is really good at organizing stuff. So she's like, yeah, I'll do it. Mm-hmm. So Anna sends through a credit card. Rachel goes to book flights for that night, but the card doesn't go through. Mm-hmm. And Anna's like, oh, I don't know what's happening. I'll call them. And so Anna calls Rachel back and says, oh, there's some issue with my bank, but the airline booking office is about to close. We really need to book the tickets. And then doesn't suggest it, but like says just enough that Rachel feels that she should jump in and suggest it. So Rachel says, why don't I just put it on my card and you can give me the money? And Anna's like, excellent, good, good idea. So Rachel books the flights on her card to Marrakesh. They all go to the airport. When they're at the airport, there's things like, because it's a work trip for Jesse, like all his luggage, like he has a lot of video equipment that costs extra to check and, and Anna has no money to pay for that because her card's still not working. So Rachel's like, okay, Anna's like, well, do you want to just pay it and I'll just pay you all this money as soon as my card's fixed. And so Rachel, from the point they're at the airport in America, is paying for everything. but Rachel's like, and she says now, like, in her book, it's hard, like I said, it's hard to feel sorry for her, but you kind of do. But like, she's like, you know, there was no reason for me not to think she was a billionaire. I'd seen her charter a helicopter, like, which she had. Anna chartered a helicopter and then never paid for it. Like, she's like, I'd seen her go to a tech conference in San Francisco, like, on a private plane. Like, there was no reason for me not to think she was a billionaire and that rich people are just flippant with money and she'll pay me back. So they get to Marrakesh. And the first couple of days are lovely, but Casey, the trainer, gets food poisoning and goes home, which she says later, thank God. The hotel's amazing. They have a private butler. There's a concierge who anything they want to do, they just get booked private tours of the city. Like, they have private tours of the local markets where Rachel's still paying for everything that Anna wants. Like, Anna gets like $3,000 worth of tailor-made clothes and Rachel pays for it. And Anna's like, oh, when my card's fixed, I'll just, I'll give it back to you. And Rachel's like, okay, boop. But Anna pretty much wants to stay at the villa all the time. Like, she doesn't want to explore Marrakesh, which is because everything at the villa is just charged to your room. It's charged to your hotel bill. One night, they come back from being out to dinner or something and the hotel management are in their room looking really threatening. And they say that there is no form of payment attached to the room And they need somebody to, like, put a credit card down immediately. And this is, like, a $10,000 a night room. So this is not, like, this is serious money. And Rachel says Anna acts really indignant towards them. She's like, like, I don't, look, there must just be a problem with my car. Let me call my bank. And then, like, she's, like, on the phone to someone. And then she's like, the bank says they'll sort it out and, like, it'll be done in the morning. And they're like, no, we're not leaving. Someone is putting down a card. And Rachel says Anna just acts really bizarre and just sits down on the couch and just won't, and just stares into space and won't do anything. And Rachel's like, Anna, like, you've got to sort something out. Like, talk to someone else at your bank. Can you call your parents? And Anna's like, I told them the bank would sort it out by morning. If they don't want to accept that, then what?
Is this all being documented by that Jesse guy?
No, he's not filming this stuff. No. Apparently, he went there expecting to be filming a whole bunch of serious footage, and all she really wanted him to do was take Instagram photos of her. So that's all he did the whole time.
All right.
Yeah. And so, like, Anna just sits there staring into space while these threatening men and, like, just stop talking to the men, basically acted like they weren't in the room. And Rachel's like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what's happening. And the men are like, we need someone to put a credit card down now. We're going to call the police. And they're like, look, we need just anyone's credit card. If your friend is going to sort her account out tomorrow, then why don't you just give us your card? And, like, we won't charge it. It'll just be the card we have on hold until we get Anna's card. And so Rachel hands over her personal credit card, but there's not enough money on that for there to be a hold on that for how much the hotel is. So she also hands over her Vanity Fair work credit card that's meant for work expenses, because she's like, because in her head she's like, we're gonna get arrested, someone has to hand over a credit card, here you go. So she just, and she's like, Anna will take care of it, Anna will pay for it, it's just a hold, doesn't matter. The next day, Rachel has organized to fly from Marrakesh to Europe to meet up with some friends for like a week. So Rachel leaves and Anna promises, like, don't worry, I'll sort it, the money will be in your account, like, whatever, don't worry about it, like, you'll be fine. And a few days later, Rachel sees that the hotel in Marrakesh, like, because she hasn't been able to use her credit cards because there's been this hold on them, but she assumed Anna would put her card down, her credit cards would get released, she'd be fine. A few days later, Rachel sees that the hotel in Marrakesh has charged her personal and work credit cards for the hotel stay, and it's a combined total of $65,000. Anna, meanwhile, has left the hotel. Jesse, the videographer who stayed with her a couple of extra days, said that, like, Anna was meant to book him a trip home because it was a work trip, and she just kept not booking. And eventually he was like, I don't think this girl has any money. So he just went to the hotel and booked his own flight home and left because he was like, I don't know. And so Rachel is in Europe. She's living off her savings because her credit cards, you know, she owes $65,000 on them, and she's calling Anna, and, like, and Anna, the thing with her is she's not avoiding it. She's like, totally, I'm on the phone with my parents', like, bank person. The money will go through to you. Like, don't, I don't know why they charged you. They shouldn't have done that. Like, I'll sort this out. And so Rachel every day is looking in her account, like, is the money there? Is the money there? Because she's freaking out, A, because she has no money, B, because she put it on her work credit card. Yeah. She's like, I'm going to get fired. Like, like, that is for literally, like, buying coffees for people at meetings. Like, that's not. And so Rachel gets back to New York a couple weeks later. She keeps hassling Anna. Anna keeps giving her excuses. She talks to Jesse, who's like, Rachel, I hate to tell you this, but I think Anna's a scammer. And Jesse's like, no. I mean, Rachel's like, no, she can't be. She's rich. I've seen her on a helicopter. And so Rachel then calls the personal trainer, Casey. And Casey says that Anna called her from Marrakesh crying, saying there was a mix-up with her bank, and could Casey please book her a ticket home and she'll pay her in a few days when this it's sorted out. And Casey was like, oh, okay. And Anna was like, by the way, can you book first class? And so Casey booked her a first-class ticket home from Marrakesh. And Casey was like, yeah, she still hasn't paid me. I've been struggling to get in touch with her. So Rachel and Casey are like, what the F? Does she have any money? But Rachel still doesn't think it's a scam. She's like, maybe her parents have cut her off and she's too embarrassed to tell us. Like, maybe her parents give her a monthly allowance and she went over it and she's waiting till next month. Like, because it's just not conceivable in her brain that she's not a billionaire. And so Rachel's hassling her every day, checking her account. The credit card companies are chasing her. She can't make the minimum payment because what would that be for $65,000? Like a lot. The minimum payment would be a lot. Yeah, I don't even...
Neither of us are good enough at maths or finance for that.
She has to borrow money off a family friend to pay off the work credit card so she won't lose her job. She starts tracking down other people who have their own Anna stories. And so that's when she realizes that things are a bit dodgy. So the mutual friends that she met Anna through don't talk to Anna anymore because of just like money that never got paid back. She like talks to this other guy who said, you know, I became convinced she didn't have any money. She kept like at first when you're not paying for things, it's like, oh, whatever, it's an accident. But then it just became obvious. And so she's like, something's dodgy with Anna. Meanwhile, things aren't going great for Anna because she's burnt through those 30 Gs. She got a free holiday off this friend in Marrakesh. And when she gets back, she turns up at her hotel and the concierge, Nef, is like, dude, what are you doing here? They locked all your stuff in storage and kicked you out because you owe like 50 grand. Like, if I don't tell them you're here, I'm probably going to get in trouble. Please leave. And so Anna goes to another hotel for a few days. But at that point, the fancy hotels in New York are all like, be on alert for this German redhead who said she's going to wire you money because she won't. So then that hotel kicks her out. And one night she turns up at Casey's house crying, saying she needs somewhere to stay because her parents are like withholding money from her to punish her because they want her to come home. And so her credit card access is cut off and please, can she stay over? And Casey's like, oh, fine, stay for a night. She makes her leave the next day, but Anna leaves her laptop there. And Casey's like, I know she left that on purpose. So Casey goes and leaves it with the front desk of her building. And the front desk guy calls her and said that Anna came, got her laptop, and then waited in the foyer for 8 hours. Just waiting, because I don't think she had anywhere else to go. So Anna's been avoiding Rachel at this point. Like, Rachel's been trying to get in touch with her, trying to get her money, freaking out. And so Casey organizes a lunch with Anna, but secretly invites Rachel. And at the lunch, Rachel and Casey are like, Anna, WTF, what's going on? Have your parents cut you off? What's the deal? And Anna's like, no. Like, she just denies. And at the end of the lunch, Rachel's just like, get effed, Anna. Like, get effed. Like, I'm going to take this further. I'm going to get a lawyer or whatever. So a couple days later, Anna gets arrested trying to skip out on a bill at a restaurant. So normally she just goes and eats and then like and charges it to her room, but she's not in any hotel now. Nobody knows where she's staying right now. They think she's like hiring cars and sleeping in cars that she hires. I bet she had some pretty like desperate nights at this point. And she still won't just go to McDonald's. Like, she goes to the most expensive restaurants in town and then just tries to walk out.
And so this one. Dash.
Yes. Yep. And so this one restaurant won't let her leave. They call the police. She gets arrested. So this is when the New York Post is tipped off about this, like, heiress wannabe who's going around, like, rorting all these expensive hotels and restaurants around New York. So they write this story about her that comes up in the New York Post. Rachel sees the story. She's like, what the hell? She finally goes to the police. And the police are like, oh, yeah, actually, we probably should look into this girl because it's not just restaurant bills. It turns out there's this whole thing with a $25 million loan and $100,000 from a bank. And so they're like, yeah, we're going to try and find her. And then at this point, Anna is gone. She's gone. Disappeared. So the New York Post starts writing stories about her. The police have started looking for her, disappeared. So the police say to Rachel, can you please try and contact her and pretend to be her friend? Like, and Rachel's like, I can't. I told her to get effed. And they're like, no, we need you to be friendly with her so we can figure out where she is. Because if we tip her off, she might just go back to Germany and then we'll never get her. And so Rachel starts messaging her, like, I'm worried about you. Like, you've disappeared. Like, I'm not angry about the money anymore. I just want to make sure you're okay. Blah, 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 blah. It takes a few weeks, but Anna eventually starts replying. And I think Anna thinks she's hooked her back in again because scammers always think they can hook you back in again. So Anna eventually tells Rachel, I'm really sick. I'm at Passages in Los Angeles, which is one of the most expensive exclusive rehab resorts in the world. Mm-hmm. Rachel tells the police and they're like, we technically can arrest someone in rehab, but it's messy and you need warrants and it's medical privacy stuff. It would be a lot easier for us if you can get her to leave the building mm-hmm. and then we can arrest her. And so Rachel is going to Los Angeles for work. So mm-hmm. she messages Anna and says, can we meet up for lunch? Mm-hmm. And this is what I find so funny. Like, Anna was so, like, despo for booze. She messages Rachel and says, can you get a bunch of glass Voss water bottles and tip out the water and fill them up with vodka and bring them when you come? And Rachel's like, I don't think I'm going to do that, Anna. Anyway, so
she actually was in rehab.
Well, she had gone to rehab because she assumed that she could hide there and she couldn't get arrested because right. rehabs aren't allowed to reveal your medical information and therefore where you are, that you're there.
Right.
But she didn't think she needed to be in rehab, but she does like to drink. So she's like, man, I really want a cocktail. So she asked Rachel to sneak her some booze. But anyway, Rachel organizes to meet her for lunch. And Anna is allowed day leave. So she leaves the rehab to go and meet Rachel at this restaurant. And the second she sets foot outside of the rehab, a bunch of police officers come and arrest her. Mm-hmm. So Rachel kind of set her up. She's flown back to New York and sent to Rikers Island, which is a pretty notorious prison, which has since shut because it was so dangerous and awful mm-hmm. and terrible. She's brought up on charges of grand larceny, theft of services, and defrauding hotels and acquaintances. And this is where she becomes a bit famous, mm-hmm. which is kind of what she loves. Mm-hmm. So Rachel writes a story about the whole ordeal for Vanity Fair because that's where she works. Mm-hmm. Neff, the concierge, tells her story to a journalist at The Cut in New York Magazine, and she writes this huge expose on Anna, which goes viral. Like, people are obsessed with this fake heiress. And so then people become really obsessed with her. Her trial, when she eventually gets put on trial, is filmed, and she hires a stylist to dress her every day. So this stylist is pulling looks off the runway to dress her in each day she goes to court. And when they ask the stylist why, she's like, well, I didn't get paid, but I just figured it was good exposure for me as a stylist. Mm. And she did look fabulous every day. Yeah. So that stylist did a good job. People start wearing T-shirts around New York saying things like German heiress or my other T-shirt will wire you $60,000. People are obsessed with her. She's offered a plea for hardly any jail time, like months, but it's only if she agrees to go back to Germany immediately and do the jail time in Germany. And she won't because she knows that even being in prison in the US is better for her commercially now that she's getting a bit famous. Mm-hmm. Her lawyer basically pushes her story as like the ultimate New York dream chaser. Like, she came to New York, she came to the Big Apple, and she decided to fake it until she could make it. And like, she didn't quite get there, but she never intended to defraud anyone. She had big plans and she went after them and she fell a bit short, but she's inspirational.
She's a gritty hustler.
She's a gritty hustler, which is the New York dream. And the jury was like, lol, no. And so she's found guilty of grand larceny. She's sentenced to a minimum of 4 years and a maximum of 12 years in prison. Mm. So the earliest she can be released is May 2021, but it's unlikely that she will be because she's like kind of naughty in prison. She's had like 30 infractions. She's been given solitary confinement. She's really rude to guards. But she's kind of okay with it because she's famous now. Like, she gets interviewed by people and, like, she was telling one that she thinks her time in prison is a really fascinating anthropological study. She's writing all about her time in New York and her time in prison. She's even posting on Instagram sometimes. So Neff, the concierge, is pretty much her only friend left. And Neff goes to visit her and, like, so she posted on Instagram the other day. You can just go to Instagram, it's Anna Delvey. She posts stuff, like really funny stuff. Like, just like there was one of her in her prison like outfit, but then with her Celine glasses. Mm. And there was like another like little sketch cartoon of her saying, "But I'm too pretty to go to jail." Like she's just totally embracing her ridiculousness. She's also, I think, like getting money on the down low. So Netflix bought the rights to the article that The Cut wrote that Neff was interviewed for. And Shonda Rhimes is producing a show on Netflix about her based on that article. And Anna was reportedly getting paid a fee through her lawyer for that Netflix series. Mm. But then they found, like, the courts found out about it. So Netflix was like, oh, no, we're not giving her any money. But I reckon, like, there is some deal down low way that she's getting paid.
Yeah,
definitely. Like, it goes through some corporation that goes to somewhere that goes to somewhere and she ends up with money. Neff is also a consultant on that show. So Neff is getting paid as a consultant for that Netflix show.
Mm-hmm.
Rachel eventually got a $300,000 book deal to flesh out the article she wrote for Vanity Fair. She published a book called My Friend Anna, which is just, I swear to God, I got through it in a day because it's just ridiculous, like how she got defrauded, but also you don't feel that sorry for her because she's just like this rich girl from Manhattan. That book also, the rights to that book also got sold to HBO. So HBO is making a series based on Rachel's book. And I love that Lena Dunham is the one producing that one because I was like, of course Lena Dunham would relate to the rich girl like in Manhattan who like didn't realize that her billionaire friend wasn't a billionaire. So Rachel's book is getting made into a series for HBO with Lena Dunham attached. And so she got $300,000 for the book. The book's a bestseller, plus she would have got money from selling the rights. So Rachel's good. Plus, it took 2 years, but American Express eventually agreed to waive the $65,000. So, like, it took a long time, but they were like, okay, fine, you got rorted. So that happened. Yeah, and so Anna's just in prison, all this stuff swirling around her that apparently she's loving, and she's just embraced this kind of sorry, not sorry. Like a reporter interviewed her a couple months ago and she literally said, they said to her, are you sorry? And she said, no, I'm not sorry at all. I was trying to make something of myself and I would do it again.
Wow. She's the female Bernie Madoff.
Well, kind, but
she's got that swagger and that confidence that
just,
I gave,
you know,
it a crack.
Yeah, fake it till you make
Anyone who got scammed, it's their fault. They should have been smarter.
Well, a lot of the stuff I've read about her, people have said male bankers and male people in the finance industry do this all the time. They like scam people, they hustle their way to the top and they make it and everyone's like, well done. Like you worked hard and you got there. And people are like, it's just because she's a young woman that like it kind of all fell on its butt. But I don't know if that's a fair assessment, but that's what people say. Like this is the way that, you know, older aggressive men behave in the industry all the time. And it's, you know, like, is she a scammer? Was it all a scam from the start? Or was she really thinking I can hustle my way into high society? Imagine if she had pulled it off. Like if she had got that $25 million loan, do you think it would have worked?
Quite probably. Yes, because if that was the new cool Soho house and, you know, celebs were being spotted there, then it was probably going to start turning a profit pretty quickly and then she'd be able to live off that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if she could lure celebrities there, then she'd be able to lure clientele that'd be able to, you know, afford the really expensive membership fee. And then I can't even tell you how expensive the drinks and food are in there as well. So she'd probably start making some decent coin pretty quickly.
So, she could have pulled it off. She was close. She was very close.
And can I ask, obviously she had a lot of chutzpah and confidence. Was she beautiful as well?
She's quite a striking face. She's very skinny, little kind of pixie-ish look. But no, not just average looking. And people said she wasn't that beautiful. She wasn't that charming. People said she wasn't even that nice. She just knew how to act like a rich person. She knew the lingo.
Wow.
You're looking at her. What do you think?
Not what I was picturing at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. Wow.
I mean, even the finance people, like, who were interviewed later said she talked like she had grown up around money. Like, she knew her stuff.
Yeah. She does have that sort of Olsen twin-esque quality of being very petite and very expressionless.
Yeah.
Like just too cool to give a toss about anything.
Yes.
Yeah, I can definitely see the hipster angle that she was probably working as well. Wow.
So that's the story of the fake heiress, Anna Delvey, a.k.a. Anna Sorokin, who has said she'll get deported from America when she eventually gets released from prison. And she said she's probably going to go live in London. And I think she will make something of herself, to be honest, because she's embraced the whole story that her lawyer put out there, that she's just a hustler who tried to make it.
Mm-hmm.
She's completely shameless about, like, the fact that she is, you know, incredibly consumeristic and shallow and all that stuff. Like, I honestly think that whole, like, the T-shirt, German heiress, and the T-shirt, like, my other T-shirt, well, why are you $60,000? That's just her summed up. Yeah. Like, she thinks that's funny and she loves it.
Yeah.
She'll probably wear that T-shirt when she walks out of prison if she didn't have a stylist getting her something off the runway.
Mm. So many merchandising opportunities. Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, notoriety is just as good as fame these days.
Exactly. And she understands that. She understands that. Like, I honestly think she's a hustler and she's just going to use this whole thing to her advantage. I think she's probably thinking she's glad it happened. Yeah.
Well, you know, Mae West, this is almost 100 years ago. The fact that she went to jail, it was only for 8 days, but the fact that she went to jail just catapulted her career.
Yeah.
Because then the scandal surrounding her.
What about how Martha Stewart embraces it? Became best friends with Snoop Dogg. Talks about her prison stint all the time.
It gives you that extra bit of street cred that
so
people want you more.
It's I cannot get enough of this. I'm obsessed with this girl. So we'll put it all in the show notes, but I read the article that made her famous and that went viral is on The Cut. It's an article by Jessica Pressler. It doesn't really have a title. It's just like, just Google Anna Delvey The Cut, but it's in the show notes. I also read Rachel's book called My Friend Anna, which although it's a little insufferable, it's really fascinating. And every page you turn, you're like, she's not going to give you the money.
Yeah.
Don't give her your credit card. But she does. And then follow her on Instagram because occasionally she does a sneaky update from prison, which is the best. And then the show's coming out on Netflix and by Shonda Rhimes. And then the HBO show has started filming and it's got Julie Garner playing Anna, who is not a super famous actress, but she's been in a lot of TV shows. She's in Ozark at the moment and she's perfect casting. Mm-hmm. So that's it. You know, I gave you just the gist, but if you want to know more, it's all there. You can go down so many rabbit holes with this girl. It's fascinating.
That is such a good story. That completely passed me by. I knew nothing about this.
Yeah.
I can't
believe that. Well, you know, I like my female scammers, so I'm all over it. That's it, my lover.
Very good. All right.
Thank you.
Well, till next time.
Till next time. All right. Love you. Bye.
Bye.
Listener.